Ecclesiastes chapter 1. The book is entitled The Preacher, so all preachers ought to enjoy this. Ecclesiastes, actually, that's basically what the word means, the gatherer and the proclaimer. And this is a book by the preacher. That is to actually encourage folks in life, because without the Lord, life is very vain. Life is meaningful only if we know the Lord. In chapter 12, remember that he said this is the duty of man. Remember God and serve Him. Keep His commandments. Basically, that is the whole responsibility of man. The whole reason for man's existence is to glorify God. And so, the writer of Proverbs now will instruct us. The preacher is none other than Solomon himself. As far as I could discern, there's no other son of David that fits the description that we have. So this month, you can see, we're just getting started on the introduction to the book of Ecclesiastes. We had concluded the book of Proverbs last week, and we're going to leave the contentious woman alone for a few weeks and look at Ecclesiastes. And this book, as we pointed out, the title is The Preacher. Really, that's basically the idea of the thought. And the first three verses of this first chapter will give us the introduction. I have 18 verses in the first chapter. Let's read these verses. We'll come back then and try to begin at least to get a direction that we will be following. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun? One generation passeth away, and another generation cometh, but the earth abideth forever. The sun also riseth, and the sun goeth down, and hasteth to his place where he arose. The wind goeth toward the south, and turneth about unto the north. It whirleth about continually, and the wind returneth again according to his circuits. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. Unto the place from whence the rivers came or come, thither they return again. All things are full of labor. Man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. The thing that hath been, it is that which shall be. And that which is done is that which shall be done. And there is no new thing under the sun. Is there anything whereof it may be said, see, this is new? It hath been already of old time, which was before us. There is no remembrance of former things, neither shall there be any remembrance of things that are to come with those that shall come after. I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. I gave my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom concerning all things that are done under heaven. This sore travail hath God given to the sons of man to be exercised therewith. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and vexation of spirit. That which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is wanting cannot be numbered. I communed with mine own heart, saying, lo, I am come to great estate, and have gotten more wisdom than all they that have been before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. I gave my heart to know wisdom, and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is vexation of spirit. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increaseth knowledge increaseth sorrow. If we were to just stop our study there and close the book, we'd be rather disheartened, wouldn't we? I mean, it seems like that it's a sad commentary as the preacher gives us the introduction to his message. But we'll find that there is some hope as we get toward the end of the book. But again, we need the introduction to this book, for there are many that have taken, as another has said, portions of this book and have wrestled to their own destruction and have brought upon themselves much sorrow because of a misunderstanding of the intent of the writer, or the preacher, as he gives this particular book. Likely Solomon wrote the most of his Proverbs whenever he was a younger man. And we would likely assume by the context here and the experiences that he relates that he was on up in years at the time that he wrote the book of Ecclesiastes. And so he's had a long, hard look at life and all of its experiences. And he said, all is vanity, vanity of vanities, vexation of spirit, just nothing that is profitable under the sun. And we'd have to understand that he's speaking from a human standpoint, and rightfully so. And he'll prove his case. For example, in another chapter, and we'll cover it in detail when we get to it, but he said, what does it really gain if a man were to amass a great wealth and a great estate? Because whenever he leaves here, he'll leave it to somebody else, and that somebody else may be a fool and squander all that he's worked for and amassed all of his life. And so when he takes a look at it, he said, it's vanity of vanities. Let's look at the introduction first of all. Again, the preacher, the gatherer, and every preacher likes to think he can gather and hopefully has a gathering about him so that he can proclaim his message to someone. And so this preacher, the son of David, again king in Jerusalem, the only son of David that was ever king in Jerusalem was Solomon. There were descendants of David that were king, but Solomon actually is the son that took the throne in Jerusalem after David had passed off of the scene. So this again, we would say it was another book that was written by Solomon. Solomon has a different connotation. Some have speculated that he did not use his name Solomon because it indicates the delight of God or things of that nature. And by this time, he's convinced with all the experiences he's had and the backsliding even that he's gone through in the latter part of his life that that's not a good name. He just declares himself the proclaimer, the preacher, the declarer. And so we have him then as he will, and he states his text, vanity of vanities. Saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. So we're going to have a resounding theme through this book. He introduces the subject, he'll carry it through, and he'll prove his case time and again as he points out vanity. Now we have to keep in mind that again, this vanity is under the sun. You have to understand that he's talking about an earthly life and relationships here on earth without the Lord, really. That's what he's indicating. The Jehovah's Witness, the Mormons, others will take these verses and wrestle them to their own destruction because they try to spiritualize what the preacher is saying. And what he's saying is that life without the Lord is just not worthwhile. And there have been a lot of men that have proved that. They, as young men like Solomon, were just full of enthusiasm and thought the world was a cherry and they were out to pick that cherry and just everything was going to be great. But as time takes its toll, they become very disenchanted and overwhelmed. And ultimately very disappointed in life down at the end of life if they don't know the Lord. Been my experience in life as I have evaluated people and actually taken count of people in life that really the only ones that cope with life real well are the believers. I'm talking about when it gets down to old age and into the years where, as he will say later on, the windows begin to get dark. The grinders cease because they're few, and we awake at the chirping of a bird, and the night's sleep is not as easy to get as it used to be. A lot of things disturb, and so this preacher is saying life really is disenchanting. And a lot of people have proven that in the course of their life, that life is disenchanting without the Lord, but with the Lord, then it has a different perspective. Good morning, Eugenia. Come right on in. We're starting our study in the book of Ecclesiastes. We're in chapter 1. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher. Vanity of vanities. And actually, there's an emphasis here we might want to mention as we go by. There are some things that are just vanity or vain. But this is the vanity of vanity. It seems as it is magnified in the thinking of this preacher. And this not only is a man that speaks academically, but he speaks experimentally. In other words, this is vanity of vanities. He's had the experiences of life that prove his case and the point that he is determined to make. What profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun? I keep in mind that statement. There are key words here. There's actually a key word, I suppose, to understanding, or key words are vanities, or vanity of vanities. The key thoughts that we need to keep in mind, or a key thought, is that under the sun, that which is done here on earth in this now where we live. And so he states his case. He gives us the introduction in these first three verses. And then he immediately begins to prove his point. He gives some illustrations of vanity in verses 4 on through verse 11. And I think we can understand what the point he's trying to get across. He said, "One generation passeth away and another generation cometh, but the earth abideth forever." What is the profit of a man's labor under the sun? Because he passes away. That's what the writer is saying. Now, some of us are realizing that life has, by and large, gone. That we've experienced a lot of life, and we know that there's another generation coming on. And honestly, sometimes I get put out with the next generation because I see a lack of understanding, and we'd like to save them from a lot of pitfalls, but they seem to have to reinvent the wheel again, and so they'll follow that generation and that train of thought and thinking they must pursue. But he said, "One generation passeth away and another generation cometh, but the earth abideth forever." Now, you and I at this point can go to various places on the earth, and we can get into the general proximity of the places where people stood. If we're so of a mind, we can go and trace out and likely stand in some of the places where George Washington stood. We can go to the Holy Land, and I don't know that we could get on the exact dirt, but we could stand in the close proximity to the place where Jesus stood and gave some of the most important messages that you can ever find anywhere in the world. And yet, those generations are gone, and other generations have passed since then. One generation passeth away, and another generation cometh. He said, that's just vanity, vanity of vanities. What profit then is the labor of man under the sun? Where's he going if he's not going to abide? The earth abides, but man does not. Sometimes it is rather overwhelming when we get into a place where some particular spectacular event occurred. Almost invariably, when I step inside the Alamo, I cannot help but be moved by the scene that we find in matter of record in history of events that occurred there in about 13 days. As some men, and we account them brave men, they were men like we are, and some of them real rascals, but they were men, and they were brave men, and they took their stand and stood their ground and gave their lives. And Texas is a state today, and actually even was an independent nation at one time because of the sacrifice that these men make. So it's hard not to be moved by that environment that were there, but those men are gone. No earthly way to ever bring them back. And that's the premise that this man began his declaration with. One generation passeth away and another generation cometh. And the truth of the matter is that there will be a generation that will come that will forget what has been done. For example, we go back to the history of the nation of Israel as Joseph was sold into slavery in Egypt. And that first generation of Egyptians, as well as those Israelites, they were thankful because of Joseph and his brilliance as a leader, as Pharaoh had said that he would be second only to him in the throne. In other things, he'd be the first in the land even. As far as gathering the crops were concerned, Pharaoh himself didn't know what was gathered together in those storehouses, but Joseph knew. And he was a blessing to Egypt as well as to the Israelites that were brought down in that nation enlarging while they were in Egypt. But the Bible said that there came a generation that didn't know Joseph. They forgot what had happened and what had occurred. And so history has a way of doing that. I made a statement one time in a message here, and Brother Travis Wheeler thought about it for a while. He came back and said, "You're right." I made the simple statement that likely from the time of our death 50 years later, nobody would even know us. And that's the truth. Because most of the people we'll know are in the same proximity of age, and you give 50 years, and that very well might even take care of my grandchildren. And so we'll soon be forgotten. If I were to go into Parker County and began to ask around with the name of my grandfather, John Simpstone, "Do you know him?" And there wouldn't be anybody there that knows him. I barely remember him. I was about 15, I think, or 13, I guess, when he passed away. And so I remember some things about him, but even that has, that particular memory has faded with time. And so this is the premise he's making. He said it's vain, it's vanity, because one generation passes away and another generation comes. Then he looked at the natural world or the physical universe, and he said, "The sun also riseth, and the sun goeth down, and hasteth to his place where he arose." In other words, they're just a continual circle of events. And finally he'll say, "There's not anything new that's under the sun." Well, in a sense, he's right. He said, "The wind goeth toward the south, and turneth about unto the north. It whirleth about continually, and the wind returneth again according to his circuits." All the rivers, he said, run into the sea, and by and large, that's true. One runs into the Dead Sea, and even the Dead Sea is not filled. There's no escape or no exit from the Dead Sea, and yet it's not filled. Evaporation takes its toll. He said the waters run into the sea, and then they just return where they came from, just a continual circle. And let me take an aside that maybe will make you appreciate the Lord. The Lord has made a purifying system that works. You run the water out into the sea and it evaporates and goes back up wherever it falls. And rainwater is pure water unless it picks up acid as it falls through the atmosphere. But the water itself starts out from the clouds pure because it's been evaporated. And God has a good system. It works. Works well. But the preacher is looking at it from the standpoint of under the sun and what's the value of life, because everything's the same. Now, there will be some in the last days that will say all things continue as they were since the fathers fell asleep. They're talking about a different thing. But Solomon's just talking about a continual order of events. The sun rises, and the sun goes down, and then it goes over and it rises again. Well, that's continual. The wind blows south and then blows north. All the rivers, you should run into the sea. And yet the seas are not full because the water just goes back to where it started from. In verse 8 he said, "All things are full of labor. Man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing." In other words, there's just no understanding this thing because it just overwhelms us. Things just go along. And then the premise is, what profit hath the man of all his labor which he taketh unto the sun? If everything just goes on along as it does. And all things are full of labor. Man can't explain it. He can't be satisfied with seeing it. It amazes and overwhelms. So there's not much then to say, but all is vanity. He said, "The thing that hath been is that which shall be, and that which is done is that which shall be done, and there is no new thing under the sun." Nowhere in recorded history has there ever been a time when the sun
changed his mind and came up in the west and sat in the east. And every time the wind blows south, sometime or another, it'll blow north. You ever noticed that it never did all of a sudden just start to blow south and just continue to blow south? Just always the order of events occurs. And he then said, that's just not anything different. All things are like they are and were, and it's predictable. And I'm thankful that it is, because you ever think if things weren't predictable and God wasn't in control, you ever just think what it would do to man and to the earth if all of a sudden that the flowers decided to bloom in the winter and the grain would produce in the winter instead of the summer? I mean, it would reverse everything. We wouldn't have anything. We'd starve to death immediately. In other words, things are predictable, and yet they go on. And this seems to overwhelm this man, the preacher at this time, that he's come to a conclusion that there's nothing new under the sun. There's not any new challenge. There's nowhere to go. Man's always looking for a challenge and hoping to find something that will be distinct and different. Is there anything, he said, whereof it may be said, see, this is new? It been already of old time which was before us. Now man has been able to expand his outreach a little bit in our generation. And men have put their foot on the moon, but they didn't change the moon. Nor have they changed the order of events. So really, in the fullest sense of the word, this preacher is right as he states his case and proves his point. He's simply, again, in these verses, giving us illustrations of vanity. Those were things just go along. And we could add to that, most of us, we labor all week and get paid on Friday, and Saturday we're broke again. And we labor all week. We continue the cycle. And that's what he's talking about, the vanities here. He's giving us some ideas of vanity, illustrations of it in these verses here. He said, we can't point at anything and say this is new. It's already of old, which is before us. It's all of a sudden we may discover something that's going on and say, my, isn't this interesting? But we find out that it has occurred before we discovered it. It's just been going on all the time. And we in our limited knowledge have come to realize some things. Men have, in our generation, discovered the atom, and they've even been able to split it and do a lot of things, but the atom was always around and it performed the same, and it still performs the same as it always did. So things are not new. We simply have come to further enlightenment ourselves sometimes, but there's nothing that we can point to and say, this is new. There is no remembrance, he said, of former things. Neither shall there be any remembrance of those of things that are to come with those that shall come after. In other words, when we depart this life, and again, keep in mind it's under the sun. Whenever we depart this life, we're not ever coming back to it. For example, whatever trade you might work. I so happen to work in the electrical trade, but there's not, when I depart this life, there'll not be a time that I can mark it in the calendar and say, well, I'm going to be back on a certain day and I'll wire you a house. But I won't be back to take up that trade again. And so he's saying that there's no remembrance of former things. In other words, we don't come back. Since the time of Solomon's death, there's never been a time he sat back in and said, I'd like to just take a moment and have another session and impart the wisdom that I have. In other words, there's no remembrance of that. We only have just written record of this man's life very briefly, very limited as far as what we can find of him, and he's not coming back. There have been a lot of times that I'd have loved to have gone up to Weatherford and been able to sit down on the front porch and counsel with my dad and ask him about some things. But when he departed this life back in 1969, he's not stepped back again on that front porch that I could talk with him. That's the idea of this, no remembrance of former things. It's not talking about there's not a remembrance or an existence. This is a mistake the Jehovah's Witnesses make. They believe in soul sleep and no awakening for those that are have not attained their place in the future kingdom. That's not what he's talking about. He's just simply speaking of things under the sun. And I hope we've illustrated that to you, what the man is trying to say here. said, neither shall there be any remembrance of things that are to come with those that shall come after. The next generation won't be any different. It'll be the same thing over again. Now, sometimes youth has its beauty and its benefit because there's optimism. But the same course of events, by and large, will occur to my sons and my grandchildren that is occurring to me. The same thing will happen in their lifetime as the earth continues on. The thing that will change it is the return of our Lord Jesus Christ, the destruction of this earth as we know it now, renovation and renewal, and a new heaven and a new earth. But up until then, one generation will be basically the same as another. And the next generation will not be any different. This is the idea. He gives us the illustrations of vanity and why he's stating this. He might say, well, he was a pessimistic old man. Well, probably so. Rightfully so, but he's telling us the truth as he sees it and as it is, in matter of fact. So he gets in these verses, as you read them, keep in mind what he said. What profit hath a man of all his labor which is under the heaven? He gives the illustration of the vanity of this man's labor. Some have looked at a man and said, boy, he was really successful, was he? Did his wealth mean anything to him? Could he retain his life in the day of death? Did all of his wealth mean anything at that time? Later on he'll say, said thing happens to the poor man and rich man. They're equalized in death. In other words, one does not have an advantage over another, except that maybe the rich man may have a few moments of more comfort by being able to provide himself some particular softer bed, but when it's all said and done, there is no distinction or difference. All is vanity. And that's the illustrations that he gives us of vanity in these verses. And then he even said there's vanity in wisdom. If we get real smart, he said it really brings grief and increases sorrow. Now, that's hard to understand, but some of the guys I went to school with took this to heart, so they never did learn very much. They didn't apply themselves very well. It is futile anyway. Well, understood right, it is. Vanity and vanities. But I don't think we ought to give up on life. And the preacher didn't think that either. He said, I, the preacher, was over Israel in Jerusalem. And he said, I gave my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom concerning all things that are done under heaven. This is sore travail that God given to the sons of men to be exercised therewith. In other words, this is a tough thing, and certainly it is. To begin to search out why everything is done like it's done under heaven. And just to look at that without the concept that God is over all, it's overwhelming. It's not too unimaginable why men sometimes go insane, go crazy, as they begin to think about things that are larger than they are without the concept of God. I'm thankful I'm simple enough to believe the Word, and the Word created is true. We understand by faith that the world was framed by the Word of God. Now, I don't have to wrestle with a lot of things that other folks are trying to wrestle with. I don't have to try to put everything into a geological framework so that it all falls into place. Because there have been many upheavals and a lot of things done on this earth that you and I weren't around to see. And it sure does get mind-boggling. But he said, I gave my heart to seek. I looked at this and searched out concerning all things that are done under heaven. If we were to think about it for a moment and just to let our minds dwell on it, again, just the natural order of the crops as they are planted and they sprout and they grow and things come to pass. Why? If we continue to ask that why, all of a sudden it overwhelms us because there's really no answer unless you look back to God. And he said, I've seen all the works that are done under the sun, and behold, it is all vanity and vexation of spirit. Again, it's beyond him. The eye is not satisfied, he said, with seeing, nor the ear with hearing. In other words, we just can find no satisfying answers unless we know the Lord. That which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is wanting cannot be numbered. There are just some things that you and I cannot change, and there are certain things that we can't increase. Or it's just not there. Out here in West Texas, up around Plainview, there have been efforts to stretch. In other words, that there always seems to be just a lack of water in the area. So men began to irrigate. And everything went along well for a few years, but all of a sudden they began to realize that the farms that were out in the farther outreaches of the circle around that area, their wells began to go dry. And so they saw that actually there was a depleting water supply, a great massive storage underground, but it was depleting. It was not replenishing itself. And year after year, there'd be one farm and just lose their wells, and the circle becomes narrower and narrower and smaller and smaller. And so there's some things that are wanting that we can't number, we can't increase, because it's not there and within our power. And these are the things he's talking about. He said, I commune with mine own heart, saying, lo, I'm come to great estate, have gotten more wisdom than all they that have been before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart had great experience of wisdom and knowledge, gave my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is vexation of spirit. In other words, just what he learned, he found it overwhelming. And we'll find out later that he learned a lot of things. He undertook to study life. He studied, what is the study of animals? Somebody tell me. Biology is a study of more than a smaller than there's a. But anyway, whatever it is, he studied the peacock, he studied the various animals, he even had them imported. This man Solomon did. And he studied all of these things, but he said it's vexation of spirit. Certain for in much wisdom is much grief. And he that increaseth knowledge increaseth sorrow. And sometimes that seems to be true, because the more we know, the more we see of the vanity of life. Sometimes, it, honestly, and I don't just say stay simple, but I've noticed that some simple people don't seem to be disturbed by things that those of us who have a little more knowledge have. And so Solomon is a wise man, and you give him some instruction here in this book. We've getting an introduction. I trust we'll enjoy the book. Don't be so disheartened this morning by just the introduction, because there is a purpose in life. I am persuaded, as he said, in the... Actually, let me just make sure if we can find it as we close this morning. He sums it up. And if this is begun in early life, then it gives life meaning and certainly direction. Chapter 12, remember now thy creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the day or the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. And he goes on through and said that certainly that this was something we ought to do. If we put the Lord in our lives, then a lot of the things that would disturb the natural man will not disturb us, because we have a foundation that's sure and steadfast. Jesus said of his own word, heaven and earth shall pass away, but my word shall not pass away. And so when it's all said and done and summed up, if we know the Lord, then we know the end results. We know also that there is a future for the children of God that a man just naturally from under the sun is not going to learn or know. We'll stop.